You're listening to the Fifth Down Podcast, football for fans, by fans.
Always Ryan Jones. We are bringing you all the action from week one and for week two. A lot of things happened this first week. A lot of great games, 16 games this past week, starting last Thursday and then continuing on through the two games last night, the last one ending well after midnight. But the one thing I have to say, after full week games now, I don't want to forget about ice bucket challenges and issue a challenge of my own. Tony Romo, I challenge you to read a defense. Out of everything that went on this past weekend, all the games, all the surprises, the upsets, and everything else, the one thing I could not believe was how poorly... I shouldn't even say that, because we've come to expect this out of Tony, out of the Romo and the Cowboys, but just how poorly and how inept that this team looked, and how he looked coming back from injury and not really having a whole lot of reps in the preseason. Three first-half picks, practically back-to-back-to-back, awful decisions, awful play calling, no imaginative play calling in terms of being able to spread the ball around between different running backs and receivers and whatnot. I think DeMarco Murray was the only... got 22 out of the 24 carries, something like that, in the run game. It was just, same old Cowboys looked absolutely horrible. It was a disgrace of a 4 o'clock game.
Oh, you're waiting for me. Hey, in my defense, you just kind of stopped talking in the middle of it there. But anyway, look, it's the same old Cowboys, same old Bull. I mean... I think people keep expecting to have like this massive turnaround from the Cowboys, and they're in this perpetual rebuilding year, and they never seem to get better. They always seem to get worse. They don't even remain the same. They just, I mean, we've been saying for the past at least two seasons, as long as Jerry Jones is going to be in the front office and he owns that team, like, don't expect anything special from them, at least not in the near future.
It drives me crazy because this is a team that has plenty of talent on paper. When you look at some of the names and some of the skill positions on this team, they have a lot of talent. They have somebody who, despite his awful decisions in the biggest of moments, is a franchise quarterback. I mean, there's a lot of teams out there that have quarterbacks that would much rather have Tony Romo and take the good with the bad. I mean, if your starting quarterback is, take the case of last season, for example, Case Keenum, or Mike Glennon, or even Josh McCown before we realized what Josh McCown was capable of doing, or Jason Campbell, a bunch of these guys, if you gave these teams a choice between those quarterbacks and Tony Romo, they'd probably take Romo 8 out of 10 times, knowing his history of making the worst possible decisions in the biggest possible moments. And despite all that, and despite the poor coaching, and Jerry just caring about making money and selling tickets and promoting his brand, they've still been competing for the division championship week 17 every year the last 3 years. They haven't been a sub-500 team the past year.
Yeah, true. That I will give you that. But also, if you look at the state of their division right now, that's not really an accomplishment.
Well, right now they're playing the worst division in all of football. And I'm sorry, I mean, we'll talk about your boys in blue a little later, but... It truly is the worst division of football. It's the only division right now. I understand it's only through 1 week of the season, but every team is 0-1. It's a winless division. It's a division that 9-7 has basically won the division the last few years. That 8-8 is enough to get you into consideration at the end of the season. And it just comes down to tiebreakers and division records and whatnot. You're not getting wild card seeds out of the NFC East because the other divisions are far superior. And I mean, hell, in the NFC North and the NFC West, you need to be 12-5 to even be 12-4. I'm sorry, to even be considered for a wild card spot, basically, with the talent that other teams in the NFC have. Now, the NFC is still superior conference to the AFC. Not disputing that, but the way that this division has been playing, I mean, led by the Cowboys and the Redskins and the Giants to the post Super Bowl. it's they're pretty much bottom feeders in the NFC.
It seems there's a cycle in the league, right? It seems like for about 4 or 5 years, one division is really, really crappy, and then the rest of the division are good, and then you have that one dominant division, and then the guys come and go, and then it kind of moves around. You remember when there was, you didn't even want to discuss any team in the NFC West or the AFC West? I mean, the AFC West was always a bit of a, well, no. I mean, there was a time when there was a lot of competition out of the AFC West, right? There was a lot of competition out of the NFC East. There was a lot of competition out of the AFC East. Maybe not so much AFC North. Well, I mean, then again, you have your Pittsburgh and your...
Right, yeah, the Steelers.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, so I mean, like, it seems to just have cycles. Right now, it just so happens that the NFC West is the dominant division in all of football, and I don't even know who would be second. I mean, the way it's looking, possibly after 1 week, it could possibly be AFC East right now just because of what happened over this weekend. But after 1 week, you can't even say that.
I would probably say the NFC North with the Packers, Bears, Vikings, and Lions. Packers, you have Aaron Rodgers. They're just a powerhouse of an offense. The Lions, it's the same thing. They proved that they can still light it up on the offensive side of the ball. This past week, the Vikings came out and looked really, really good this past week, and we'll talk about them also. And then the Bears went from one of the most dominant defense in the league a few years ago to now an offense that you just don't want to mess with between Jay Cutler, Brandon Marshall, Alshon Jeffrey, Martellus Bennett, and Matt Forte. I mean, it's those are names on offense that really are one of the best groupings in terms of position of skill players in the league right now. I mean, you have teams that have the elite quarterback and the number one receiver, or you have teams that have the good quarterback and the workhorse running back and a couple good receivers. But the Bears, on the offensive side of the ball, have stars, like complete, utter stars at all those positions. Two at the receiver position, a tight end, a running back, and then a quarterback who, despite my dislike for Jay Cutler and the fact that we've blasted him on this show almost every season since we've been doing it, I mean, he is a talented quarterback when healthy and when protected.
And not colorblind.
True. That's one thing he's had his games, but overall, over the course of a season, he does know which team he's throwing to. All right. We mentioned the NFC, so let's stay there. Let's talk about the Giants a little bit. I got to do this to you, man. They just looked inept. I mean, it's not all on Eli. Last year, you can say it was Eli, and it was the turnovers, not protecting the ball, and Eli has up and down seasons, and blah, blah, blah. But now, at this point, you can't even blame Eli anymore. You can't even blame the system anymore, the fact that the team doesn't know it. The offensive line is in shambles. It's awful. They're not giving anybody any time to do anything. Your receivers, outside of Victor Cruz, can't get open, can't run routes, can't make split decisions. Jernigan and Ruben Randall just do not look like the one and two receivers that the Giants hoped they would be, and there's only so much you can do with a slot receiver, Victor Cruz, as talented as he is. If you can devote single coverage to your outside receivers, and then you get a corner one-on-one with Victor Cruz plus safety help, and you know that he's the only threat out there, he's getting shut down. It's easy to shut down a slot receiver in that regard when you can single out the outside receivers. And then the defense. They made so many additions on defense, and you're healthy on defense, and you choose to just give Calvin Johnson, the premier receiver in this league, some space. And I use that term very, very fluidly, because when he caught that, what was it, a 61-yard touchdown pass?
Yep.
There was nobody near him. And I mean nobody near him. He could have caught the ball, sat down, tightened up his cleats, adjusted his pads, took his helmet. Well, couldn't take his helmet off. That was not the play. But you get what I'm saying. Like, he could have just like sat there and polished the ball and then get back up and waltz in for a touchdown.
Yeah.
How do you do that if you're the Giants? Like, how do you game plan against the Lions, knowing what the Lions have on offense? How do you create a game plan and not, on every single play of the game, not have a safety over the top against Calvin?
So there's a couple of things. One, it's Calvin Johnson. Look, there have been lots of teams much better than the Giants that have tried and failed at containing him.
So you can't even try, just kind of let him waltz around and do his thing?
Well, okay, look at it this way. How many teams have tried and did just as bad, if not worse? I mean, at least we sort of limited the damage that he's done. I mean, you're talking about a guy who single-handedly lit up the scoreboard and countless teams already. He did his damage, but he didn't take over the game. I guess you could say.
Like a buck 62.
Okay, that's probably on the low side.
$1.64, I'm sorry. He's leading the league right now in reception yards. 164 yards in one game.
I mean, look, crap happens, right? I mean, the problem that the Giants have is all of the above, but the biggest problem that you said is what you said before. You know, it's the offensive line. They're still having offensive line issues. They're going to continue to have receiver issues because they don't have a true outside receiver right now. They don't. They were the hope was Odell Beckham would be the was Beckham? Beckham? And, no, that's a soccer player. Beckham. would
be Odell Beckham Jr., OBJ.
Yeah, like he would be. I don't know why I said Beckham and Beckham.
Okay, it's Odell Beckham Jr.
I think that the idea is for him to be the outside guy. But right now, we don't have that outside guy. At Jernigan, Ruben.
Right, and I can understand that if going into this week he got hurt and he wasn't there, but he hasn't been there all preseason.
Yeah, well,
dude, it's not like this was sudden and unexpected. You guys knew for a while now that he's not going to be ready week one.
Yeah, I mean, and then it all kind of comes down to the typical Jerry Reese bull, right? I mean, look, I was quite happy with a lot of the moves that he made in the offseason. And then there's a lot of moves that he has, at least in my opinion, has failed to make this off, you know, to address the issues that the team is having now. And one of them is, look, I mean, you had a guy in what's his face in Stephen Hill. Stephen Hill became available. I say what you want about Stephen Hill. I would take Stephen Hill over Darrell Jernigan or Ruben Randall any day. Especially considering Ruben Randall is probably the best out the two, and he is probably even more erratic and undependable than Stephen Hill ever was. At least Stephen Hill had the speed going for him.
Yeah, but he couldn't catch.
Well, neither could what's his face? Jesus. He used to play for the Browns and went to the Jets.
Greg Little?
No. Whatever, it don't matter. They just got rid of him. I just can't, this name is like slipping completely out of my mind. But anyway.
Chancey Stuckey?
Nah, didn't he start on the
Colts? He was from the Jets to the, no, it's Stokely. That's Brandon Stokely.
Yeah. Anyway, whatever, it's not important. It was gone. No, it's like Holmes.
D'Antonio?
Was it D'Antonio? Yeah.
D'Antonio could catch. D'Antonio was a Super Bowl MVP for the Steelers.
Yeah, and then he came to the Jets and kept dropping the ball.
He came to the Jets and was a star until he got hurt and until Mark Sanchez stopped throwing in the ball, and then he became a little crybaby, and then he didn't want to play because he got hurt, and it was never the same. And now he's on the Bears, and he's contributing. Well, he had a big drop this past
Yeah, well, as a Jets fan, you know more. But from my point of view, every time I've seen the dude, he's made drop just as many great catches as he's caught. That's from what I've seen from the games I've
watched. Outside of Stephen Hill's first game in the NFL, I have not seen anything even remotely decent out of the guy. He cannot catch at all. Can run routes. He was awful. I mean, I don't know that he's a complete bust. I just feel like we didn't develop him properly, and I think that somebody else will have that opportunity with him, but he was awful. Now, in terms of Jerry Reese and his decision with the Giants, look, I trust Jerry Reese to develop a receiver probably better than, or not to develop, it's not his job, but to scout and select receivers better than probably any general manager in the league. And I say that because of what he proved with Steve Smith and Mario Manningham and Hakeem Nicks and Victor Cruz and all these guys who Giants fans were all up in arms when the Giants didn't re-sign receiver X and let them go somewhere else. And the next person who came in was just as big or if not better than the person he replaced. And this happened time and time again under Jerry Reese. And so I give him carte blanche in terms of his decision-making with receivers. Now, the Giants led the league this past offseason in free agent transactions. So clearly he went out there, he spent some money, he made some moves, he brought in a ton of pieces and made a ton, he had a ton of transactions. However, this is basically a repeat of a conversation we had several years ago about the Bears. This team had one glaring hole, and he didn't address it at all, and that's the offensive line. You need a solid offensive line in this league. It's what allows you to pass. It's what allows you to run. It's what allows you to run an offense. Forget about having an elite quarterback. We've seen teams make it to the Super Bowl or win Super Bowls without elite quarterbacks. It hasn't happened recently, but it has happened. You have to protect whatever is behind the line, whether that's a quarterback throwing a ball or handing it off to a running back who's trying to be a workhorse. You have to protect, and the Giants have one of the worst offensive lines in the league, and they did not address it properly in the offseason, despite all the transactions that they made. And that, to me, falls on Jerry Reese, and it's the same problem that the Bears had a few years ago, and it took the general manager getting fired and somebody else coming in to really address that situation, and now look at where the Bears are offensively. Now, you can make the argument that, okay, they addressed the offensive line, and they got the offense where it needs to be, and now the defense in shambles, and you can't have it all. I mean, there's no perfect team in the league. Every team has flaws. Every team has to sacrifice somewhere on the football field. You can't have everything.
I mean, on the flip side, I think he did a great job with the defense. Look, defensively, the Giants are way better than they have been in a while. It used to be that the strength of the Giants' defense was in their defensive line, and once they can get pressure on you, you can run, you can run the ball on them because their linebacking core sucked. You can throw the ball because they're constantly banged up in the backfield. And then the guys that they did have who weren't injured weren't really that good. Corey Webster comes to mind. I think defensively they're a solid unit right now, more solid than they've been probably even before the last Super Bowl. I think like any team, they have some gelling to do. they kind of have to get into the groove. But I mean, I like what I saw from them. They're more disciplined. They play a lot of containment. And the whole Megatron thing aside, like I said, there's lots of teams better than the Giants that have been able to stop them. So them not being able to contain them is not a disappointment or a surprise.
All right. Let's go somewhere else then. Staying with the NFC East, RG3, just talk about him for a second. To me, he and the rest of the Redskins picked up right where they left off. As RG3 picked up right where they left off as the quarterback of the Redskins and going absolutely nowhere. I mean, they invested a ton in this guy in terms of draft picks, in terms of branding, the future of the team, coaching decisions, personnel decisions, things of that nature. And to me, I'm not putting him in the Vince Young, Jamarcus Russell category because he has the work ethic, I think. But I just don't know that he has the endurance or the skill set or the, I don't want to use the word intelligence, but the ability to really comprehend and run the offense and not revert back to the barrel ways or his initial instinct, which is not necessary to play a pro style offense or to play the style of offense that is implemented in by the coaching staff. And I just don't know if you're the Redskins, how long you can continue to just force the issue with RG3 and try to make it work with this guy because of what you invested in him, knowing that you have a guy in Kirk Cousins behind him who should have an opportunity to try to do something.
Before I even comment on any of this, I have a question. How long will it be before we consider RG3 to be a bust?
I'll give him two more seasons, including this one, this season and next season. If the Redskins fail to go over 500 both years and at least compete for the division next year, then I'd consider him a bust. They need to go 8-8 this year, and they need to go like 10-6 next year.
Okay, I pretty much already consider him a bust. Like so without kind of sticking to this for too long, right? So he kind of in the beginning he kind of reminded me of, you know, a lot of these young guys who are athletic, right? You think of your Vicks, you think of McNabb, you think of your McNair, and all these dudes who just basically tore into the league and, you know, basically can use their feet and, you know, and they can throw the ball. But the difference between them and him, I think, is that these guys' game evolved as they played longer, right? As they got older, as time went by, you know, if you remember, you know, just because he's the most recent memory in my memory, when Vic came into the league, his first instinct was to take off with the ball 90% of the time. Now, he was dazzling as hell when he did it, but that was his first instinct. By his second season, he started to be a little bit more of a pocket passer. I think his third season is when he was out for the year with the broken leg, right? But then he grew up and got more mature as a quarterback, he did what any quarterback should be doing, right? You don't use your legs as the primary means of moving the ball down the field. You use your legs to extend the play. And it seems like RG3 doesn't do that. And it's not just necessarily him and his skill set. I think it's the offense that he's being asked to run. He's not really being asked to use his brain. He's not really being asked to make a play in the traditional sense. He's being asked to be flashy and do the things that he's comfortable with instead of being challenged, right? I mean, in a way, it's more like Tim Tebow, right? I mean, that's probably even a more apt comparison. He's Tim Tebow, except he can actually throw the ball.
Right. The play calling was interesting. There was a ton of plays that I saw the way he threw the ball behind the line of scrimmage. So a lot of screen passes, a lot of bubble screens, things of that nature. And when you consider the head coach of the Redskins, I believe Jay Gruden, that's not what he had as an offensive coordinator for the Bengals last year. It just wasn't. It's a different style of play. And so you got to figure that he's trying to tailor his coaching style or his offensive game plan or styling. He's trying to suit the play calling in the game around RG3's skill set. And I don't think that's right, because it's not going to match what he's used to. And it's creating this weird dynamic where he just doesn't feel comfortable. I almost think that it would be better to try to force him to be a more traditional Tom Brady type quarterback or even an Aaron Rodgers or Andrew Luck type quarterback, a guy whose first instinct is pocket passer, drop back, make you reach, throw the ball. If nothing's there, then you get out and use those legs as a secondary option. Part of the reason why Vic and McNabb and McNair and these guys succeeded so well back then is because if you looked around the league back then at the coaching staffs, you didn't have a ton of college coaches in the NFL. It just didn't work for them. And you had guys like Pete Carroll back then who just – it didn't work. You had Steve Spurrier. It just didn't work. You didn't have that in the league at that point. You had really just NFL lifers, born and bred guys who came up through NFL systems, were coordinators, and they got head coaching spots. And if you look around the league now, the landscape is very different. Now you have Chip Kelly and Pete Carroll and Harbaugh and Doug Marrone and a lot of these guys who came out of college. And so they know what the college system is like, and so they can plan for offenses that are based – that resemble a college system. So RG3 doesn't have that opportunity to really take advantage of defenses that may not understand how to defend against a spread formation or read option, things of that nature. Teams now are much smarter than that, and that's why you don't see too much of that style in the league. The Chip Kelly's of the world, as much as they're influencing the league offensively with their own teams, they're also influencing defenses and teaching teams how to defend against these types of quarterbacks in these styles, and it's to RG3's detriment. Now you look at the person drafted ahead of RG3 and Andrew Luck, and this guy's playing like the next Peyton Manning. I mean, he's been just a complete beast since his rookie year. He got better his second year, and he looks to be even better this year. I mean, I understand they lost, but they put up the first half wasn't great, but he's a guy who's come back several times during his career. The Colts are easily the favorite to win that division. Now the Texans look like they're getting a little bit better, but now you lose Jadeveon Clowney for 4 to 6 weeks. I don't think the Texans are going to really compete to win that division, maybe for a wild card in the AFC because it's so wide open. But the Colts went from the Peyton Manning era to one bad season. Now all of a sudden they're the favorites again every year to win that division because of Andrew Luck. And he has more yards than anybody in the history of the NFL through his first two seasons. And he's playing great. They played well overall against the Broncos team, which, by the way, Peyton has now beaten all 32 teams in the NFL with the win Sunday night. But back to the Colts, they had Luck throw the ball 53 times in that game. Now, it's very rare that you see quarterbacks throw the ball more than 50 times. I mean, it happens with Tom Brady. It happens with Aaron Rodgers, guys like that. And I mean, we can put Luck in that category to a certain extent at this point, but now, understanding that running backs don't pose much of a threat between Trent Richardson and Ahmad Bradshaw, but you can't sustain success with that one-dimensional of a game. You can't go in and throw the ball 53 times. I understand you were down early, but come on, that's just unbalanced. That's one-dimensional, and the more games that he drops back that many times to throw a ball, the more opportunities he's going to have to get hit. And every time he gets hit, there's a chance that he's not going to get back up. And you're going to lose him for the season. And we know what happened the last time the Colts lost their quarterback for a season. I mean, I really don't know at this point who the backup is in Indianapolis. I don't think anybody really does, for the same reason that nobody ever really did when Peyton Manning was the quarterback, because you hope you never have to see who that person is. Unfortunately, when the time came that you had to figure out who that person was, the team was as awful as you can possibly be.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know, man. I think at this point for a lot of teams, it's a bit of a crapshoot in terms of not just who they're developing. But, I mean, I also, you know what, I forget all this. I actually blame the NCAA for this, for a lot of this, right? It's a case, in my opinion at least, where guys are coming out of college and not being prepared to be able to transition to the next level, right?
Yeah, I see it the other way around. I see guys coming out of college and being able to contribute to NFL teams quicker and faster than ever before.
No, I mean, look, I think, I tend to disagree with that. If only because I think at a certain level you have to have a certain amount of mental maturity and I guess for lack of a better term, and a great work ethic, a professional work ethic, right, to come into the league. And yeah, you know, yes, okay, so physically you may be able to play sooner, you might be able, you know, you figure out, you know, you're fresh, you're out of college, you just came out in the environment where you were learning, or at least you hope you're learning for 4 years, right? So in my opinion, by that very nature, you should be able to pick things up faster than the guys that have been in the league 3, 4, 5, 8 years. I mean, these guys are old, they're not in that learning mode anymore, but it doesn't mean that you're ready to do it, you know what I mean?
But don't you think that as a junior or senior in college, knowing that you want to transition to the pros, do you think that if you don't have that mental maturity or that work ethic by that point in your life or in your career, you're not going to have it? I mean, don't we look at Jamarcus Russell and Vince Young and Stephen Hill and these guys and say that they weren't ready coming out of college and they were thrust into the starting job right away and they couldn't handle it? And then we look at Andrew Luck and we say, okay, he had the mental maturity and he had the work ethic and he transitioned just fine. And I mean, I feel like if you don't have it by that point in your college career, you're not going to get it. It's not all of a sudden going to snap for you, because by the time it does, you're already going to be washed out of the league. Average career in the league is still 3.5 years.
It's just sad.
For every Tom Brady and every Peyton Manning who plays 15, 18 years in this league, there's 100 guys that play 1 year or 18 months or 2 years, and that's it. And they don't make the team the second year, and they make a practice squad maybe, and then they get cut from the practice squad, whatever it happens to be. It's not career-ending injuries. It's guys who just can't handle the mental aspect of the game and the physical aspect of the game. They just don't have it in them for whatever reason it is.
Yeah. I don't know, bro. I'll be honest with you about something here. I used to be very fascinated in this sport. And it seems like the past couple of seasons, it's been more the same to me. It hasn't been as entertaining. Like, yes, the games have been great. I mean, the last night's Monday night game was awesome. I mean, but like, it seems like the game has gotten kind of politically correct. I mean, like, I don't know how to even phrase this, right? It's not politically correct, kind of bureaucratic, right? With the new rules, with the, you know, with the ridiculously young kids making way too much money, with the, you know, like, it just seems like the game itself is just, it doesn't seem to hold the same, like, mystique and attraction for me than it always did. I mean, I'm still a diehard football fan, but I don't, like, breathe football the way I used to.
So I think we grew up watching football as a sport, and we consider it to be a sport. And now with technology and social media and real-time dissemination, and with everybody having an opinion, I mean, the two of us are nobodies, but yet we do a show and a podcast and everybody else, and there's millions of people on Twitter giving their thoughts and opinions, and there's petitions and this and that. So everybody has an opinion, and it matters to a league. And so now we see that it is a business, and we see that it's treated like a business, and they don't shy away from admitting that, look, it's a business. And so when something happens like the whole Ray Rice thing, then it turns into this uproar that, well, you're a $6 billion, you have like a $6 billion a year worth of revenue, and yet you can't put out proper PSAs and proper campaigns and outreach programs and things of that nature to try to make sure that your brand stands for something more than just sports. So we grew up, we just watched football. We watched sports. We watched the game. We watched 11 guys hit another 11 guys, and it was fun, and we loved the highlights, and we loved the game. We look forward to it every Sunday and Monday night. We didn't have it Tuesday morning, Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, Wednesday night, Thursday morning, a game Thursday night. We didn't have it 24/7. We didn't have all these stories that get fabricated just to fill airtime. We didn't have interactive polls on Twitter and Sports Nation and things of that nature. And it just, all of that stuff now just creates this model where we have to understand that it's a business and that they make decisions outside of the game of football because of the brand that they are and because of the shield and everything else to maintain this, I don't know, this mystique that they're above the sport, that they're more than just a sport. I don't know. I miss the days. I understand why it is the way it is now, but I agree with you in that sense that I miss the days where we watched football because it was a sport and we loved the game. I don't know. I don't know where you want to go with that. I guess we just talk about the games. A few interesting games this past weekend where the underdogs going into the games had won. Titans, Vikings, Bills, and Dolphins all get big wins. I mean, those are teams that were expected to pretty much lose or not really compete at all this year, and we still don't know that they will. One Sunday doesn't really mean a whole lot in terms of a 16-game season, but, I mean, these are teams that not only won, but they looked good doing it. I mean, the Bills put up a good fight against a tough, tough Chicago team, and they're winning that game in overtime. The Dolphins punched Tom Brady in the mouth over and over and over again, and they seemed to get better as they lost players. And the Dolphins weren't really expected to do a whole lot this season, at least not in my opinion, not in a lot of people's opinions. But they came out there, they got beat pretty bad, not bad, but, I mean, the game was going the way you would have expected it to go in the first half. Second half comes around, they lose a couple guys, and this defense just starts to get up and starts to get in Brady's face and play some tough defense. Get him hit, get him on the floor, and they come away with a big win. They shut out the Patriots in the second half, And now they look like this hungry, feisty sleeper team that you don't want to play. Like, they just had that feel to them that they're going to be that team this year that you just don't want to play the Dolphins. They're going to be like the Giants of a few years ago, where every quarterback they go against, they're going to knock that person out, or they're going to get them on the ground and get them dirty and get them bloody, something like that. That's what the Dolphins kind of look like to me. I'm hoping that that's just a fluke and they got up to play Tom Brady and do as much as they could to beat him because it's the rivalry. But they definitely look tough. And the Vikings and Titans, two of the teams that got some big wins and looked pretty dominant doing it.
So I'm the opposite, right? I mean, okay, so I guess I don't have a horse in this race because I'm not really – I mean, I root for the Jets because they're a New York team. But I actually hope that there's some competition in the AFC East this year. I mean, it used to be the AFC East was one of the most fun divisions in football to watch because it was always a battle. And, like, the one loss – could mean like the end of your season, basically. And now I'm just tired of seeing the Patriots on top all the time. I have no confidence in Buffalo ever being a team that they were in the early part of the millennium, you know, late 90s. But I have high hopes for the Finns. If for no other reason, because I need to see some competition. I need to see genuine competition in that division. Even crappy divisions tend to have a fight for the top. You know, it's kind of usually, you know, like your favorite saying, the tallest of the midgets. In the AFC East, it's just usually just the Patriots and everyone else may as well not even show up. And it's not because the Patriots are that much of a better team. I mean, I think in the grand scheme of things, even within their own conference, the Patriots definitely, at least past couple years, I'd say is definitely still a top five team in the AFC. But they're definitely not one or two. You know, there's definitely other teams in the AFC that I would put above the Patriots right now.
Oh, of course, absolutely. And yet, when you watch NFL Countdown and you watch Total Access and things like that, and they make all their Super Bowl predictions going into the Week 1 games, I think half of them went Seahawks-Patriots. Like, why? I understand the Seahawks because they are still a dominant team and they picked up right where they left off. I don't pick them to make the Super Bowl again. I know how difficult it is to repeat, and I feel like they lost too many pieces despite getting Percy Harvin for a full season. We'll see what happens with that. But, I mean, I just don't see the Patriots being that good of a team this year. I really don't. Brady's getting older. The defense, yeah, they got Revis, but overall I don't think defense really improved that much. Wide receiver, I don't think they've improved that much. They picked up Brandon LaFell. I mean, and you're hoping you get Amendola for a full season healthy. They're still having issues in terms of fumbles at the running back position, injuries there. Gronk, you don't know about. Timothy Wright, I mean, we don't know what he's going to be at tight end. He looks decent, but whatever. No, I don't think the Patriots are going to be that much or that dominant at all. I think that is going to be a division that is pretty wide open this year, especially the way the Dolphins played opening game. And then the Jets, if they can get through these next 6 weeks with a 2-4 schedule, if they can take two of these next six games, I think the Jets will win that division. That's all they need to do, I think, is two of those six games because the rest of the schedule is pretty loose for them. Now, talking about the Jets, they got a win opening day, but it was kind of an end win. It was against the Raiders, against a rookie quarterback in Derek Carr. The Raiders looked decent. They looked actually better than I expected them to. You don't really notice it, but the Raiders actually picked up a lot of decent talent. They picked up Charles Woodson, they had Justin Tuck from the year before. They have some talent on that team, Maurice Jones-Drew. But it's still the Raiders, and they're still from West Coast coming to East Coast. So you expect the Jets to win this game despite the secondary issues and everything else. But they had 11 penalties. Some mistiming issues, especially on a lot of trick plays by Marty, which, by the way, some of those trick plays were some of the greatest gadget plays I've seen in years in this league. I mean, he really executed – I shouldn't say executed. He really drew up some very creative plays that looked like they would work against almost any defense in the league because they were very original and very unique. However, there were mistiming issues on them between Vic and Decker and things of that nature. Some other timing issues just between with the receivers and Geno throughout the course of the game. However, Geno looked pretty good. Geno looked pretty comfortable. He made some good throws. He made some good first downs. They were very good in the mid-range game. They were very good in that 10 to 15-yard passing window. And that's really where you want to be good. I mean, okay, you don't throw that many deep balls, and you're not going to get the underneath routes all the time against most defense in the league. So 10-15 yard passing game, that's where you really want to be proficient. And they look very good in that sense. Screens, they pulled off some good ones. The three-headed monster running back looked pretty good. I mean, the team looked like they were going to make a big leap from last year. The one thing that really impressed me most, though, they tackled. Something that I've had issues with the Jets for the past few years is that they would either try to knock the ball out or they would just try to push the guy out of bounds or whatever. They couldn't tackle. They couldn't wrap a guy up. This weekend, they had good textbook, wrap the guy up tackling, not allowing a lot of yards after catch, not allowing the defense to really – the offense to sustain drives. I saw a lot of good things out of the Jets this past week, despite it being against the Raiders.
No, I agree. They had a good game for the Jets, but it was still an ugly game in general, right? let's be honest. I mean,
it was an ugly game, but I'm looking outside the context of just this one game. There were things I saw out of the team that I liked going forward.
I mean, I give you that. I mean, I still am not convinced that Geno is the guy for that team. I definitely, like, after our last show, like, I thought about the point that you made about wanting to know if he's going to be the guy and you want to know early, you know, sooner than later. And I see that point, and I guess I can agree with that. I still don't think he's the guy. I mean, that's just me, right?
But one thing he did that I hate, and he's not going to be the guy if he continues to do it, and it's the same problem that Sanchez had a little bit and the same problem that Vicks had early in his career. Dude doesn't know how to slide or get out of his own way.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
When he hits
early. Look, I mean, he's going to learn, right? I mean, you're going to learn one way or the other. You're either going to, you know, he's either going to figure it out sooner, or he's going to get knocked out. I mean, that's the typical way these guys learn anyway. I mean... It took Vic breaking his leg, basically, for him to realize that, you know, I should probably slide before I get hit. You know, yeah. I mean, RG3 seems to have learned his lesson, too, right? He tends to not do that stupid crap anymore. I mean, the thing is, a guy like that will always take more chances than a true pocket passer.
And that's why anytime you see him scramble out of the pocket, you're excited to see what happens, but you're also cringing the fact that he's going to get hit, and you hope he gets back up. We see how easy it is for somebody to tear an Achilles or tear an ACL or an MCL. I mean, look at all the hype going into with the Texans of Jadeveon Clowney. He plays one game, tears his MCL, gets surgery. Now he's out 4 to 6 weeks, and who knows how he's going to look the rest of his rookie campaign. All right, that about does it for week one. Let's get some picks in for week two. Neither one of us started off the season pretty good in terms of our weekly predictions. You started off 7-9. I started off 6-10.
Really? I thought I did better than that.
7-9, and I was 6-10. So let's see if we can get back to 500 this week. Let's take a look. Thursday night football. I lost the schedule. I believe it's the Ravens and the Steelers, if I'm not mistaken. Mistaken. What do you got on that one?
Ravens, Steelers. I actually picked the Steelers in that game.
Yeah, I got the Steelers also. Ravens, obviously, in some trouble now with the release of Ray Rice. You're going to rely on Bernard Pierce and Forsett to really carry the load running the ball. Now, I think both of those are quality backs, and they'll be okay there. Definitely some timing issues with the Ravens this past week. They did come back and kind of make it a game a little bit against Baltimore. The final score is 23-16, but that's not really indicative of how the game went. The one positive thing, if you're a Ravens fan, the defense did hold Cincinnati to, I believe it was 5 field goals to start the game.
Yeah.
But on that, I mean, not a whole lot of great things coming out of Baltimore. I think I got the Steelers with that one as well. Steelers played quite decently. I mean, they play the Browns. They played decently. They came out with a W. They couldn't really sustain.
Well, they've played better than they've played in the last couple of seasons. Say that.
I'll give you that. So we both got the Steelers in that one. All right, starting Sunday, 1 o'clock games, Dolphins and the Bills, two teams that got wins this past weekend. You're taking the Dolphins. I'm taking the Bills. So we split that one. And the Bills, just the running game that they have, some of the young talent they have, wide receiver, I think they'll be okay. Just same thing. They got to protect E.J. Manuel. If they can do that, I think they'll be able to come away with the win against the Dolphins. They also have a new owner now, and, you know, when things like that change, you typically go out there and you win your first game for the new guy, show him that you want to stick around.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just all of a sudden, I'm excited. So, excited is too strong of a word. I'm more encouraged to see the Dolphins play football this year.
And as a Jets fan, I'd much rather see the Bills win than Dolphins win any day. All right, Jaguars at the Redskins. Funny enough, we both have the Jaguars on this one.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of think it was a joke. But yeah, I think this is their year to actually have a winning season.
I don't know about winning.
Possibly even sniff the playoffs, but have a winning season.
I don't know about all that. I'd say 6-10 is probably the best the Jaguars are going to do.
No, I think they'll.
Allen Hurns is their top receiver right now. Allen Hurns.
Yeah.
Toby Gerhardt is their top running back.
Dude, they'll be fine.
Chad Henne is their quarterback.
Okay, they'll be. Okay. I'm telling you, they'll have a winning season and perhaps even sniff the playoffs.
6-10. All right. Either way, they put up a good fight against Philly. Philly still came out ahead. I was wrong. I had Philly down for a loss. So you were 8-8, and I was 7-9. I'm sorry. So you were 500 week one. And I was 7-9, not a whole lot of difference there. Okay, so where were we? You both had the Jaguars in that game against the Redskins. Cowboys and Titans, we both got the Titans.
No respect for the Cowboys.
there's just no way. That was hideous. Absolutely.
So oddly enough, I mean, I know we're trying to wrap the show up here. Oddly enough, Moose's new wife, he's a Philly fan, so you know. I didn't get a chance to get them. Well, I didn't get a chance to actually get them a wedding present just because, you know, my freaking life goes. But I decided what I'm getting her for a wedding present is I'm getting her a Giants jersey with their 9-6 or maybe 9-7. As a number and a meta on the back.
This is cool. Right
there. Hey.
All right, let's see. Cardinals and the Giants.
Yeah, I actually picked
got the Giants. I got the Cardinals. Yeah. You're going to put the Giants because that's your squad.
Pretty much.
Cardinals.
And no. Traditionally, we've actually done relatively well against the Cardinals.
Okay. The only thing going for you on that one is that the Cardinals coming back to the East Coast. And that's
hey,
always.
Hey, we've beaten them in their home, in their house. Listen, I'll pace the St. Eli post from like a couple years ago when they went into was it Arrowhead then? No, I think it was. What, they changed the name of the stadium to what? University of Phoenix Stadium now?
Well, Arrowhead is in Kansas City. It used to be Sun Life Stadium.
There
now,
you go, Sun Life. Oh,
we built the new stadium and it's University of Phoenix Stadium. All right, Cardinals at the Giants. You at the Giants. I got the Cardinals. Patriots at the Vikings. Were we crazy enough on that one? Yeah, we both took the Patriots. Saints at the Browns. I'm pretty sure we both took the Saints.
Yep.
Let's see, Falcons at the Bengals. I got the Bengals on that one. I believe you do as well, so we're agreed on that one. Lions at the Panthers. Looks like Cam Newton should start for the Panthers this week. Didn't need him last week. They still got a win over the Bucks this past weekend. We both got the Lions. And then Rams at the Bucks. You got the Rams. I got the Bucks, so we're split on that one. So we're basically going to come down to just a couple of games here.
It's the same thing last week.
Seahawks at the Chargers.
Seahawks.
Both got the Seahawks. I don't think it's going to be as easy a game as people think. I think Chargers will definitely give them a run for their money, but Seahawks still are going to come out on top with that one. Texans at the Raiders. That's going to the Texans. Although, again, I think that's going to be a closer game than a lot of people give credit for. Jets at the Packers. We split that one. I'm taking my Jets. Probably not going to happen, but I'm optimistic. And you're taking your pack. Not your pack, but you're taking the pack.
Yeah.
All right, Chiefs and the Broncos. Both got the Broncos. Chiefs, a bad loss against Tennessee this past weekend. That was not expected. Chiefs, I guess the Chiefs are a team where they have a great year, bad year, great year, bad year. So I guess they're due for one of those rough seasons. We'll see if last week was just kind of a fluke or if they continue to struggle. But we both got the Broncos. They looked way too good. They look like they're definitely going to try to compete for a Super Bowl spot again this year. Sunday night football, the Bears at the Niners. Niners opening up Levi Stadium in Santa Clara. We both got the Niners. And then Monday night football, the Eagles at the Colts. Colts get their second primetime game in a row to start the season. You are taking Nick Foles and the Eagles, and I am taking Andrew Luck and the Colts. All right, and we'll be back next Tuesday with an all-new episode of The Fifth Down. As always, follow us on Twitter. We're at Fifth Down. Write that on the website. If you like any content, please donate to help keep the show going. And again, we'll be back next Tuesday. This is Fifth Down. All right, call me off guard with the donate thing. I'll definitely like working a better.